For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Nice to see so many familiar faces. Nice to see so many new faces on this Saturday morning, the 25th of September. Training camp well underway for the Winnipeg Jets. A little more than 24 hours from now, there's going to be a Winnipeg Jets hockey game. So you know that hockey season is truly upon us. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Dave, your hair's on fire again. Ezzy, so glad that you were able to find your wallet after your trials and tribulations earlier this week.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Obviously, you saw my tweets there. Yes. I don't know about you guys, but if I don't know where my wallet is, I have a place in my house where I always have my wallet. It's like a little basket by the front door. But yes, I lost my wallet at Costco, but shout out to the good folks at the Keniston location. They called me, they called Naomi. We got my wallet. You remember what happened 5 or 6 years ago with my wallet when I missed it. I lost it, pardon me, for a year. So yeah, all's good.
If I recall correctly, you missed the wallet simultaneous with missing a show, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was longer than 5 or 6 years ago, my friend. That was probably closer to a decade ago now. And that was one of my favorite shows because we didn't know where you were for the entirety of the program. And the only way we were trying to piece it together was through your tweets in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's true. That was actually, I know what you're talking about. That was a different occasion. That was, I dropped my wallet outside of a friend's house and it sat there for about 24 hours. But obviously that was back in the day when I used to drink heavily. Now I've got two children, Drew, and I'm a responsible member of society. So this has nothing to do with drinking. I just dropped it on my way out. So, but I mean, I've got my wallet. That's all that matters. But yeah, I do remember when I missed that show. Those were the dark days of Illegal Curve for sure.
Well, those were the escapades.
That was when we had escapades, Ezzy. What are you talking about? Those weren't dark days. Yeah. Those were great days. They were entertaining days. But I can attest, I lost my digital camera. And I was convinced it was
Is this 1995?
No. It was about 10 years ago. Maybe it was I thought I lost it at the arena.
You had pictures from the Limp Bizkit concert, right?
No, but it was interesting because the guy at MTS Security knew my cousin and he goes, I guess they were flipping through it. He goes, I saw a picture of you on this phone, on this camera. And then he got in touch with my cousin. My cousin said, oh, I think it's my cousin's phone. Got me back my camera.
That is...
And that was after, honestly, that was after a year.
Really?
Yeah, it was after a long time.
Wow. Dave, can I borrow your Motorola Razr?
I've got all my old phones in the house, as you're welcome to them.
Speaking of Razr, you got that beard growing back there, so it's time to shave that thing back off. We want to see babyface Ginsberg again.
No, I don't shave again until April, Drew. I don't shave during the regular season.
It's the reverse playoff beard then, is what you're saying. Okay, fair enough. Let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Training camp underway fully as of Thursday, and it certainly has been a newsworthy training camp thus far. We'll start with the forward groups because, you know, I think that was what people were really looking forward to seeing on Thursday. How were the Jets going to line up for those first couple of skates? And the Thursday skate and the Friday skate have certainly looked the same in terms of what you would call the quote-unquote top 12. I'll go through it quickly and then we'll talk about it, of course. You know, Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, they're together. Like, really no surprise. You sort of, you know, like, I don't know what... peanut butter and jam, those three go together very well, at least in the eyes of Paul Maurice.
Peanut butter and jelly,
whatever you prefer to use, Dave. I'm not one to
I wouldn't mix it, for the record, but
you're not a peanut butter and jelly guy. What about marmalade? Do you do marmalade?
No.
I actually do like marmalade.
No.
Okay.
Well, you don't mix peanut butter.
I like Marmaduke the dog too.
The Marmaduke dog too. That's good, but you're not putting him on a sandwich. He's a little too big for that. And then that second line is what I think is really gathered a lot of attention so far. In Nikolai Ehlers, Pierre-Luc Dubois and Andrew Copp. And that was sort of the one that, you know, was most eye-catching. I would suggest that Andrew Copp is in that second line left wing spot over a guy like Paul Stastny. You know, a lot of people thought that was going to be Stastny's role given how last year ended. But so far, Stastny is playing a role alongside Adam Lowry and Christian Vesalainen on that third line for the Winnipeg Jets through the first 2 days of training camp. So it certainly is early, but you would have to assume that this is what Paul Maurice is somewhat envisioning, at least to start the season, if everyone's healthy and everyone continues to show well at training camp. And then finally, that fourth line, Jansen Harkins, Riley Nash, and then Svechnikov, who, of course, the Jets have brought over. He's actually on an AHL contract that would have to be converted to an NHL contract if he's going to crack the Winnipeg Jets lineup. So let's start with the top lines and the top group of the Winnipeg Jets. And I think people were really hoping to see, a lot of people were hoping to see Nikolaj Ehlers maybe playing in an elevated role alongside Mark Scheifele this year. And I understand where they're coming from, because I think, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers is better suited for that top line role at this stage in his career over Blake Wheeler. But at the same time, if Nikolaj Ehlers can start to make some nice magic with Pierre-Luc Dubois, well, maybe you've solved two problems with one move in keeping Ehlers and Dubois together, and then the Connor Scheifele Wheeler line together, that you know the level of success that they've tended to have.
Let's back it up, first of all, though, Drew. These are only training camp lines, right? Like, sure, we're only through 2 days of training camp, but like, we got to give you credit, because last weekend, you know, you floated the idea, little Barry Horowitz there, you floated the idea of, you know, Andrew Copp being kind of a staple of that second line along with Nikolaj Ehlers and Pierre-Luc Dubois, which obviously means Stastny comes down. And if you think about it, guys, like Stastny and Copp, there's a lot about their games that are interchangeable, right? Like, these are guys that can play center, they can play wing, they can play on the power play. I mean, Stastny, you're not going to see him as much on the PK, but we know Copp is arguably the best Jets penalty killer. But we do have to keep that in mind, that this is just training camp. And even if these lines stay intact, you know, for the first few preseason games, these could change early on in the regular season and throughout the season. But I think a lot of attention, you know, rightly so, leading up to training camp was focused on Christian Vesalainen and kind of where he was going to fit in. So the fact that Lowry and Vesalainen are skating together, that's no surprise. It's, as you mentioned, you know, is Copp going to be able, you know, to solidify himself in that second line role? And we kind of talked about this idea of, you know, not getting too fixated on the second and third lines and look at the Jets like, you know, top nine and then, you know, your fourth line, whatever bottom three you want to call it. And obviously, you know, we haven't been out at Iceplex for the first couple days of training camp, but, you know, what we're hearing from, you know, Murad and Mike McIntyre and others that have been there is that, you know, Vesalainen's looked really good. And as you mentioned earlier, Drew, Pierre-Luc Dubois and Nick Ehlers have really been clicking, and you know, that shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, these are the guys that you expect to be staples of that second line. And obviously, you know, what you said earlier, I think is perfectly, you know, reasonable to think that, you know, Ehlers is going to get more even strength time on that first line, right? That's really what the big, I think, question mark is here. Is Ehlers going to get, you know, that more 5-on-5 ice time? Because we know that, you know, there's a good chance that he's going to be on that second power play unit. And we talked about this at length, boys, last year. It doesn't really matter for the Jets, you know, who's your quote unquote first and second power play unit, because oftentimes the second power play unit is more dangerous than the first power play unit, right? So you've got Morrissey and Pionk, you know, switching from the first and second power play units. Nate Schmidt, I think, is going to factor in on that power play. But the point is, the Jets have enough talent that they have two really good power play units. But absolutely, Drew, that was kind of, you know, one of the lines that really stood out to us on the first day of training camp. And Look, Copp has a lot to prove. We know that he signed the 1 year deal. He's looking for, I would probably imagine, you know, a 4 or 5 year deal, maybe a 6 year deal from the Jets. So obviously, you know, he's going to like that, and he's going to like, you know, put the potential, you know, more ice time that he's going to get, especially at even strength. But that's definitely something to watch throughout the preseason. You know, how does Copp gel with Dubois and Ehlers, and, you know, how does Stastny do, you know, with Vesalainen and Lowry? But I don't think we should worry about anything, because you can put Paul Stastny on any line and he's going to succeed. But it's really, I think, still going to be Vesalainen who I'm going to have my eye on, because you know, this is going to be, you know, probably where he's going to play this year. It's going to be on that third line. He might get some time on that second line, but based on the way Paul Maurice uses his young forwards, you know, I wouldn't expect him to play a ton in the top six, especially early in the season, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, like you said, Ezzy, I think the biggest key is that we don't get too excited. Nobody, you know, it's always not necessarily. I went back and I looked.
I got the parade route planned already.
No, but me. I mean, in just soon? In terms of
order the rings,
settling on what the lines are going to be. For the record, it was Ehlers, Shifley, and Wheeler last year. I think the first day of training camp, and then Connor, Stasny, and Line were the second line. So
so things just, change is what you're saying?
I guess what I'm suggesting is that things do change after the first day or two of training camp. But look, I mean, I think what Paul Maurice talked about was the reason why he's going to put some of these guys together is they may be his power play units and he wants to see how they're going to work together. And that's the reason why, you know, one of the advantages the Jets have this year is that they don't have a ton of guys at training camp. So there isn't that whole idea of having to cut through a lot of the chafe to get to the wheat, if you will. And so I think the Flames have over 50 guys at camp and the Jets have about 40, 44, I think.
I thought it was something 44. I thought it was something like the Flames have like 37 forwards.
Yeah, and the Jets have
and the Jets have 43 players total.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just kind of a luxury in the sense that they've eliminated a lot of the need to figure things out. And so now he has an opportunity to play with some things. And you know, you get a chance to see Christian Vesalainen and how he can, you know, gel with a Lowry and Stasny. But what did Paul Maurice talk about on day one of training camp? He said his exhibition games will mostly be for young players because the reality for the Jets, especially for the Jets, is you want to see what you've got in David Gustafson. You want to, I mean, you should know, but it doesn't hurt, especially when teams, remember, we know that sometimes it's unbalanced, you know, especially at home, teams tend to go with their more of a veteran lineup. And it means that you're especially if you're throwing your young players, you know, a little bit to the wolves, but you have to give them that shot. Jets really need to see what they've gotten of Evgeny Svechnikov. We've heard some good reports from the first couple of days of training camp, but is he a guy who right now is on that fourth line with Riley Nash and Jansen Harkins? Maybe, but that's one of the things the Jets are going to try and establish is whether he'll be ready to kind of assume a new role with Winnipeg. He could be up on the third line. So we don't know. And that's one of the things I think the Jets are have that luxury. They know what they have in Ehlers. They know, seems like Pierre-Luc Dubois, not really a surprise, I don't think, to many people. Some people doubted it, but I really do think like it isn't a surprise that he came back revitalized, ready to go, and kind of like a, you know, third person Pierre-Luc Dubois is ready to be the best Pierre-Luc Dubois he is. And I'm not really, and honestly, I'm not surprised because we said it throughout the course of the summer that really, you know, you're not really judging him on that sole year that with the Winnipeg Jets based on all of the situations that happened. You take it into account. But really, if he has a good summer of training and a good training camp, that's what you're going to really look at for this year. And I suspect that people are going to be very happy when they see what kind of Pierre-Luc Dubois the Jets are going to get this year. And so but it's still not a huge surprise. Jets don't really need to be like, okay, what do we have in this guy? They have a fairly good idea. You know, you like the fact that they're using him at center, though. I think that's a good thing because, you know, Drew, you made the point, and I reiterate, it's that idea of you didn't trade Patrick Laine for Pierre-Luc Dubois to keep Pierre-Luc Dubois on the wing. And Paul Maurice himself said he's going to be a center. So let him be a center. And that to me, especially if him and Ehlers are going to develop a chemistry, you know, we get fixated on first, second, and third lines. And Pascal Vincent always used to joke about, I don't have lines. You know, like there's no first, second, and third line. We just send them out. Yeah. And so the truth is, you know, if they're fairly equal in terms of ice time or in terms of matchups, maybe it's a better thing for Nikolaj Ehlers with, you know, and Paul Maurice alluded to that last year, that he was playing the minutes that he was playing and having the success he was because of where he was placed. So maybe it's a better thing that, you know, Wheeler and Shifley and Connor are going up against, you know, the top defensive pairing, and you've got Ehlers and Dubois going up against the second best pairing against the opposition. So there's a lot of things that are going to change, but I think really the focus, and we've talked about it in our first couple of shows, is on those younger players, the Christian Vesalainens, the David Gustafsons, Evgeny Svechnikovs, to see where they're going to be able to establish themselves. A guy like Jansen Harkins, who we really thought was going to kind of ascend to a spot, a full-time role last year with the Jets. What has his summer been to be able to give himself that really good shot to be a fourth line center for this fourth line player, potentially for this Winnipeg Jets team on an everyday basis. So that those are the things that we're really watching, not whether Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler have chemistry, because we don't need to establish that at this point in training camp.
And Dave, just going back to Ehlers there for a second, like, we know that just because Ehlers is on the second line, you know, doesn't necessarily mean he won't, you know, spend some time on the first line. But I think something to, you know, look out for is, I mean, what would make the most sense, right, is if Ehlers is on that top line, Wheeler, you know, bumps down to the second line. Mm-hmm. And what would probably make the most sense is then you have a second line potentially of Kopp, Dubois, and Wheeler. And I think that could be really interesting because I would have to go back and look, but I don't think we saw that line combination a lot last year. But I do think I am in the camp that believes that Ehlers is going to get more 5-on-5 ice time this year. And that probably means, you know, that Wheeler is going to flip flop with him, you know, down to that second line. So that's something I would look out for this year, because we know that, you know, all the metrics suggest Ehlers is your most talented offensive forward, in addition to Mark Scheifele. But when you consider, you know, all those, you know, fancy stats like zone entries and everything like that, you know, I think Ehlers at this point in his career has earned, you know, the right to play more to play on the first line at even strength. I'm not so worried about the power play. It's really, you know, at even strength that I think, you know, a lot of you know, Jets observers are waiting to see, you know, is Maurice finally going to use him a little bit more, you know, on that top line on the wing.
Well, you know, you talk about Ehlers getting more 5-on-5 ice time, Ezzy, and I agree with you in that he will, but I don't necessarily think that it's going to come while playing alongside Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor. If Dubois and Kopp and Ehlers form a solid trio, and it certainly seems through 2 days, so a big asterisk next to that, but if it seems like if they are able to produce, and they should be able to, I think you'll just see a more balancing of that top two lines for the Winnipeg Jets, because a 1A of Connor, you know, if Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler is your 1A, you know that it's likely going to be able to produce for you. It should be able to produce for you, unless, you know, Blake Wheeler has hit this dramatic, you know, fall off the cliff. And I actually expect Blake Wheeler to be better this year than he was last year. And then if you're 1B, he wasn't bad last year. I mean, he was playing through the injury and everything. So let's assume that he's got a full year of healthiness. I don't think that
Blake Wheeler's going to be exactly what we think he's going to be. He's going to be right around a point per game.
I think there's an attitude out there that Blake Wheeler is going to be an albatross on this team or on whatever line that he's playing on. And I don't believe that to be accurate. I think Blake Wheeler is going to be just as good, if not better, than we've seen on a regular basis. I mean, there's probably a natural aging decline, but I don't think it's going to be steep. Remember, Blake Wheeler has always been a late bloomer throughout his career. It's taken him longer than quote unquote typical to really develop and generate to where he needs to be. So I think he's been able to sort of avoid the natural aging curve for a lot of his career. Last year, I think there is an asterisk next to the rib injury that we heard about that was really impacting his play.
Hold on here. For the last several years, though, Wheeler's play at 5-on-5 has been decreasing. There's no doubt about that. The numbers indicate that. So it's not just 1 year.
No, that's fine, and that's fair, but I don't think he's all of a sudden.
I think what Drew's saying is it's not as steep as it's gonna.
I know exactly what Drew's saying.
There's no question.
We can't have this debate, guys, anymore about Wheeler versus Ehlers.
Ehlers is a better
player. Period.
Yes, I agree. Ehlers is undoubtedly a better player, but if I do think that Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler is going to produce at a pretty high level. And that could be, then you get Kopp, Dubois, and Ehlers if they're producing at a very high level. And I expect that would be the case because Nikolaj Ehlers just produces, regardless of who he's playing with. He produces. He's a driving force on this Winnipeg Jets team. And so if that means that he can get Pierre-Luc Dubois even more comfortable and get Dubois producing like we expected when he was acquired from Columbus, or like we saw in the bubble against the Leafs a couple years ago, well, that's just a boon for the Winnipeg Jets. And all of a sudden, you're not that concerned about, you just have two top lines that are a matchup problem for any team. And, you know, if line A isn't going great today, well, line B is going to maybe pick up the slack for it. I don't see that. I think that Paul Maurice is hoping Ehlers and Dubois and Kopp can be together, you know, can be a go-to line for him on the regular, like he has in previously with Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler.
Well, we know Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler, though, Drew, have had their issues. Their advanced stats have not been good.
That's true.
So Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler is not necessarily a line that I would, you know, write in ink and say that that's going to be the line that we're going to see all year long. I think the point here, I think we all know the Jets have an excellent top nine. So the issue to me is not, you know, that the Jets are going to have two great second lines, whether Ehlers is on the top line or the second line. That's a given. It's that Mark Scheifele is your most talented center. And are you getting the most out of Nikolai Ehlers, you know, paired up with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Andrew Kopp? That's the issue. And again, you know, we can move on here, but I think, you know, that's why I think, you know, it's so important for Nick Ehlers to get not necessarily more minutes, but to play with Scheifele. That's, I think, the point I'm trying to make here.
Hang on, but here's my counter argument to that. I'm not sure that a line of Dubois, Kopp, and Wheeler is as successful as a line of Kopp, Dubois, and Ehlers. And I don't know that whatever advantage you're getting with a Scheifele, Connor, Ehlers line makes up for it. That would be my only comment. I'm not sure that if you have a Wheeler, Dubois, Kopp line, I'm not sure who the driver of that line is. Whereas if you have an Ehlers, Dubois, Kopp line, I think you know who the driver of that line is. You have a driver in Ehlers on that line. In the first line, you have a driver of Scheifele on that line, Dave. I don't know that a Kopp, Dubois, Wheeler line has a driver that to make up for the switch between Wheeler and Ehlers, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. And I think that you know, that's one of the things we're bound to find out throughout the course of training camp and you know, the course of a long 82 game season. You have a lot of opportunity to see how things are going. And I think to your point, Drew, if you're not, I'm not allowed to say to your point anymore. Someone challenged us. I think I just lost.
Yeah, was that on Twitter or something?
I think I just lost. Darn. But I think
take a shot.
And it's ironic because I was like, I don't think I ever say to your point, but I think I did. I guess I just found out I do.
Anyways, we all have our verbal crutches that we that we tend
that
to
is
use.
True. That is true. Anyways, further to your idea, the I just think it'll be one of those situations where you'll see, you know, Paul Maurice tends to default to certain things, and you know, Murat wrote an interesting article, that idea of the way they're going to change the subtle changes in terms of the way the forwards play, and it's on The Athletic. I linked to it in legalcurve.com in the morning papers today, and it was just this idea of having it was just this idea of having, you know, the one of the forwards being a hard back checker and just changing the style a little bit. So, so I think that's one of those situations where, you know, it may be different. We'll see what happens. Remember, boys and folks in the chat and folks listening, I think one of the biggest things that, you know, we have to factor in is the Jets change in defense and how that allows, you know, the forwards play a slightly different style. Now, are you going to want to see, you know, Mark Scheifele being benched against Toronto or the Kyle Connor when he didn't back check against Ottawa? You're not going to want to see those plays necessarily still, but the reality is I think there's going to allow a little more latitude because of the defense. We're not talking about the defense right now. And I think Ezzie's point is that, you know, there's it's easy to get fixated on the lines in the first couple of days of training camp, but you have to take all of that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, when they play tomorrow against the Ottawa Senators, you're not going to see, I mean, you don't dress your top 12 like it's the start of the regular season or anything like that. You're not going to see a regular Winnipeg Jets lineup during these exhibition games. You're going to see a mishmash of veterans and some young guys. And, you know, that was sort of the real unfortunate part of the Dylan Samberg injury, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show, is he was a guy who was scheduled to get a lot of time this preseason, and a lot of games. And now, of course, his season has certainly been derailed off whatever prep he had done, because he's going to be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks or 6 to 8 weeks. And that'll have,
I think it was 6 to 8, Drew.
Yeah. Well, with a high ankle sprain, you certainly, you know, that's, they say that, you know,
it could be 4 to 6.
They say that it's easier to come back from a broken ankle than it is a high ankle sprain, because with a broken ankle, you know, it just needs to get, you know, the bone needs to heal. Whereas a high ankle sprain, it just is a long time consuming process that really you can't accelerate any more than, you know, whenever the ankle just feels strong enough.
And so, for anybody watching on YouTube or listening to the podcast, you can go visit Drew at the Pan Am Clinic on on Taylor Avenue.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I'll take a look, as I've been known to say on more than one occasion. But, you know, it's just
I once bought that shirt for a friend of mine.
My dad bought me that shirt once. It was really creepy.
And the irony was, he is a doctor, but
yeah. Sheldon?
No, Dave's friend. There you go. You know, and in any event, thanks for derailing the entire conversation there, Mr. Manuk. That was really well done. But
name of my dad's band, by the way, Derailed.
Your dad's band is named Derailed?
Yeah, because he's with some ex-guys that used to work for, I think, CN.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're just learning all sorts of new things on this Saturday morning.
You knew my
morning.
Dad was in a band. He's a drummer.
I knew your dad was in a band. There's no question. I didn't know the name of the band, but now I know.
Shout out to Derailed.
Derailed. You can get their latest on Spotify, Apple Music, and YouTube Music, right? Something like that. But
Drew, we didn't mean to make you lose focus.
You totally made me lose focus. And whatever my genius train of thought was going to be, you guys have completely derailed me. In any event, this exhibition game, the exhibition season is, you're going to see a mix and match, but I do have to believe that, you know, you look at this forward group for the Winnipeg Jets, and I do like the addition of Andrew Copp to that second line. I think he has a higher offensive upside than Paul Stastny at this stage in his career.
I would agree with that.
Yep. But Stastny and Lowry playing alongside Christian Vesalainen, well, Christian Vesalainen is going to learn from two great professionals as to how to where you need to be and how you need to succeed in that role. I just think that decision, which sort of came as a surprise to some people when training camp opened a couple days ago, and who knows if it's going to last, but that decision to see that trio together on that third line, along with the trio together on the second line, just makes a lot of sense to me. So far in training camp, I approve of the decisions that have been made for what that's worth. And I can assure you, Paul Maurice takes my opinion worth absolutely $0.00.
Yeah, and we talked about this earlier. I think we all expected, you know, Vesalainen to at least start, you know, the preseason on the third line, and there would be a really good chance, you know, that Vesalainen plays the majority of the season on that line with Adam Lowry. But you're right, Drew. I mean, I think Andrew Copp has earned this, right? Like, Copp was one of the best Jets forwards last year. I mean, obviously, you know, Scheifele and Ehlers and Connor and Wheeler are the Jets' top forwards. But, I mean, Copp was really effective. And, yeah, like, I mean, you know, towards the end of the season in the playoffs, he maybe didn't get the offensive results that he wanted. But I think, you know, the fact that he's been a loyal soldier since he was drafted, signs the one-year deal. And it goes back to what we said earlier. I mean, there's a couple of guys in Copp and Stastny that are interchangeable on those second and third lines. So every time Stastny moves back up to the second line, and that's the thing I would also mention to your point, Drew, is that throughout the season, let's assume, guys, that Copp is kind of a staple of that second line. Well, whenever you need to move Copp down to that third line, you can. So I think that's just another bonus and another advantage for Paul Maurice.
Let's keep the Winnipeg Jets conversation and discussions going with our good friend, official television broadcaster of the Winnipeg Jets, back in Winnipeg from the Summer Palatial Palace out on the left coast of Canada. Dennis Bayak joins us on the show. Dennis, good morning. Nice to see you, buddy. How are things?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're doing great, Dennis. Good. It's good to see you after the long offseason. Yes. You know, training camp, you know, 48 hours ago it began, and you can sort of feel the excitement. And, you know, that excitement is probably palpable in all 32 NHL cities where, you know, hope springs anew anytime a new season begins. And expectations for this Winnipeg Jets team, I think internally and externally, are pretty high after what has been, by most estimations, a successful offseason.
Yeah, everybody starts 0-0. Everybody's tied for first place right now, so everybody likes that idea. So, and then they get going, and they'll see what preseason games bring, and then they'll kind of take it from there. But listening to the players talk the last couple of days, we heard it from Paul Maurice, we heard it from Kevin Cheveldayoff. Everybody very excited about what the off season was for the Winnipeg Jets, and Kevin Cheveldayoff made the point yesterday that he heard from a couple of players after he acquired Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon. So I think the players were very cognizant of where the areas of concern were for the Winnipeg Jets after that turnover on the back end. And I think since the departure of Myers and Trouba and Sherratt and Bufflin, I think this group finally feels comfortable with what that back end is.
You know, Dennis, you just mentioned, you know, Schmidt and Dillon and the defensive group, and we were talking about this kind of earlier in the show here. Like, do you, you know, kind of believe in that notion that we're going to see more of that aggressive, you know, pressure forechecking that we saw, you know, between, let's say, 2017, 2019, when you had Trouba and you had Buff and you have Myers? I realize that, you know, we're only, here at the first exhibition game, but do you see the Jets, you know, kind of going back to that more kind of aggressive high-tempo style?
Yeah, I think so, Ezra, and that's what Paul Maurice kind of alluded to maybe a week ago, where he said we're going to be play a harder style of game, more skating and a little bit more aggressive, be harder to play against. So, and watching the first couple of days in the little bit of scrimmaging that they did, that certainly seems to be, you know, an area that they want to dwell on, because the scrimmages have been very fast. They've been quick, you know, and the players understand what the system is that they want to implement here. And we have seen that. So they want to get back to that. Sometimes that game is a little bit more difficult to play than it would seem. But at the same time, I think they have the speed on this team to play that style of game. Nate Schmidt's a very good skater. Brendan Dillon certainly will keep opposition forwards honest in the neutral zone and inside his own zone with his physical play. So two guys that will fit into that style that they want to play for sure.
You know, Dennis, there's probably no more pressure on a player than on Pierre-Luc Dubois, but it sounds like from the first couple of days and from the summer he had, he's ready to kind of reassume what he was able to do in Columbus and bring it to Winnipeg. So are you surprised by that, but you know, how important is Pierre-Luc Dubois going to be for this Winnipeg Jets team, especially now that it seems like he's going to be at the center position?
Dave, I think what might have surprised me a little bit was how open he was, and I know he did it earlier this summer as well, where he did talk about his conditioning last year. I mean, that was always kind of a thought that people had, you know, did he get enough skating in during the off season last year that dragged on, you know, then he had the quarantine after the trade, then he got hurt. Was conditioning an issue? Because you couldn't go to the gym all the time and you couldn't do the things that you would normally do. He talked about that the other day, where he didn't skate as much in the summer last year as he wanted to because of COVID restrictions. Arenas were closed in some areas and all the things that go along with that. So he openly talked about that, which was maybe a bit of a surprise, but you know what? He understands what lies ahead, and he's looking at it as the glass half full, maybe even more than half full. He's had one bad year in the National Hockey League. His track record is pretty good, going all the way back to junior to when he was a higher pick, maybe by one or two than people expected he would be. He understands the situation that's here. I believe that the organization is still committed to him being a centerman. That's what we've seen here in the early going of this training camp, and I think that's what we will see throughout the course of the preseason games. But I think it's important for him to have some success, and even though players will never say that, that preseason is preseason, but I think it's important for him to have some success here through these six preseason games.
Dennis Bayak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. You know, Dennis, you talk about that success, and it seems like anybody who plays with Nikolaj Ehlers tends to get that success. Is Ehlers almost at this point a bit of a security blanket for Paul Maurice in knowing that whomever he sends out with Ehlers is likely going to get a level of comfort and going to be able to produce, sort of like Connor Scheifele and Wheeler are/were over the last number of years for the Jets head coach?
Yeah, I think we saw the evolution of Nikolaj Ehlers last year, and maybe it was tied to Patrick Laine getting traded. And I don't mean any other way other than I think he did look for Patrick Laine a lot on the ice, and Nikolaj Ehlers has a very good shot, and he's on a high right now coming off the Olympic trials where he had a terrific tournament. Denmark gets into the Olympics. So we saw him the other day in the dressing room. He had a smile from ear to ear, and why not? Just very much looking forward to the start of this season. But he has become that very dependable player for Paul Maurice. And he understands the game very well and never down on himself very much. And certainly if you are looking for somebody who's maybe struggling a little bit, that's not a bad place to put him. And I think that part of this team is going to be a bit different this year because they've added some veteran players. You've got Nate Schmidt that's always smiling. Brendan Dillon seems to be a happy-go-lucky guy that understands what his role is. So you add that to the mix. Paul Stastny is back, who I think was really good for the dressing room. You put all that together, and maybe it won't be as hard for players to come to the rink and smile, even if things aren't going very well for them at the time.
I think that's a very good point that you make there, Dennis. As Claude Noel used to say, there's lots of joy in Joyland right now. Yes. In the first couple of days of training camp, I wanted to ask you about Connor Hellebuyck, because obviously that was pretty surprising news. You know, that he had the COVID virus, you know, he got that. And then, you know, he is now vaccinated. We should mention that, as is the rest of the Jets team. But what was kind of your initial reaction to finding out that Hellebuyck, you know, had COVID-19? And is this just a reminder really, you know, to the Jets organization and the rest of the teams across the league that even though, you know, 98% of the league is vaccinated, as Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly mentioned earlier this week, is it not just a reminder that this virus is still going to have an impact on the 21-22 season?
Oh, no doubt. And I believe all the medical staffs of the all NHL teams will be continuously reminding everyone, let's not let our guard down. And the NHL is in a good spot right now. As you mentioned, the numbers there for players that are vaccinated, Connor Hellebuyck, in hindsight, and he's the only one that can answer this, in hindsight, maybe he should have got his shots in July and taken care of that maybe earlier than he did. But again, that was his decision. So, but more and more we're seeing it with the NBA, with Wiggins and other sports where this thing isn't going away. When Alberta in June declared the pandemic over, I think we've seen how that's turned out for them. Yeah. And that's why I think all the medical staffs in all sports and in life, we have to keep reminding ourselves that this thing is not over. Let's be careful. Let's do what we have to do and try and get a handle on this. I think we're still going to be dealing with this. I mean, schedule-wise and from that end of it, from the National Hockey League, I think by next summer, the hope is that we're back to after the draft being later than what it normally would be. But after that, I think everybody's hoping that we're back to a bit of a regular schedule. This year, of course, is being bit spun around with the Olympics and everything else, but we can't forget that this COVID-19 is still here. It has not gone away.
Yeah, absolutely, Dennis. And, you know, one of the things I find interesting, and I'm curious about your take on it, is we talked about a little bit earlier in the show, the idea that the Jets don't have as many guys in training camp as they normally do, and what that means for Paul Maurice and being able to kind of establish what his lineup, like the Flames have almost as many forwards as the Jets do total guys in camp. So how much of an advantage will that be for Paul Maurice, kind of not having to cut through so many players and being able to kind of take a look at the guys he wants to look at?
There's not a coach in the National Hockey League that likes a big training camp. Yeah. The last thing they want to be dealing with is dealing with 75 or 80 players at training camp. Excuse me. And that's happened over the years where in some cases you want to have a look at a lot of young guys and sorry, you got to be choked up there. And they kind of go from there. But I think coaches like a smaller group. They like to be able to have a look at what they have as early as they possibly can and then kind of go from there. So I do think it's an advantage. I think you can get into systems a lot quicker than you normally would. They are spending some time on scrimmage because I still do believe that's when you really get to see what a player can bring to your organization and to your team. So they are spending some time on scrimmage. They are trying some different line combinations. But I think if you talk to all NHL coaches, I think if they had a training camp of about 35 or 40 guys, I think that would be perfect for them because they do want to see the next group. They want to see the five or six guys that if they do run into injuries during the course of the year, they do want to see those call-ups because they want to know what to expect from that player. But having 10, 12, 15 invitees or all of your junior drafts going back the last couple of years, coaches aren't that big on that.
Dennis Bayak, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. You know, Dennis, we've talked a lot about sort of the top lines, and you look at that third line that's now got Stastny and Lowry as the veteran presence there with the young guy in Christian Veselainen. You know, in your mind, knowing what you know about Veselainen's skill set, do you like that fit for him there? And you know, how much sort of how beneficial do you think it will be to him just to be able to learn from two really smart players, two really, you know, veteran guys who know how the NHL works? How beneficial will that be for Veselainen on his development this season?
Well, very big from both sides of it. Certainly from his standpoint, given the opportunity to show what he can do. But the Winnipeg Jets want to get a real good grasp of what they have in Christian Veselainen. And to throw him on a fourth line and put him in a situation where he's not going to play much, I'm not sure that answers that question. So for now, anyway, he's going to get elevated in the lineup. He's going to get the opportunity to play with some veteran players. And now it's up to him to grab the ball and run with it and show this organization that I can play in your top nine. I can play the offside. That's a new position for him. And he needs to work, and he'll understand that playing with two veteran players, get to the spots where you can shoot the puck, because he can really shoot the puck. Mm-hmm. And that's the area that we need to see from Christian Vesalainen. That's the area that Winnipeg Jets want to see from him. So he's a smart player. He understands the situation that he is in, and he understands how important this training camp is for him. So certainly playing with veteran players is a huge benefit to him, just mentally, knowing that that on the bench, he's going to get some instruction from those guys as to where he should be in this situation, where he should be in that situation.
You know, Dennis, we just talked about Vesalainen, and we've talked about, you know, some other players. Has there been any other, you know, player or players that, you know, have really caught your attention or you've been focused on? I realize that, you know, that's a very open-ended question, and we're only, you know, a couple days into training camp here, and you're going to be, you know, out at Iceplex this morning, you know, after jumping on with us. And again, we appreciate that you, you know, stayed home for an extra few minutes before you headed off to Iceplex.
I couldn't turn down the money.
Yeah, about that, Dennis.
But yeah, has there been, you know, one or two players that, you know, you can mention that, you know, have really kind of stood out for you in terms of, you know, maybe having a bit of a, you know, a different look or approach from last year?
Well, stand out and watching are kind of two different things. So I'll start with who I kind of been trying to get a look at. You want to see some of the new guys. You want to see Riley Nash. You want to see Brendan Dillon. I think we saw enough of Nate Schmidt last year with Vancouver that and when he was with Vegas, we have a pretty good handle on what he brings. Brendan Dillon, of course, back to his days in the Western Conference. But so some of the newer faces you want to have a look at. The other one I've kind of kept an eye on is Svechnikov. I think there's an interesting story there, mm-hmm. and a storyline that kind of needs to be watched, because this guy's a very skilled player. And if he can get his game back to where it needs to be, if he can be healthy and get his game back to where he needs to be, he might be a guy that in 10 days or in 2 weeks that we're spending quite a bit of time talking about. So that's one of the areas that you keep an eye on. And then even on the back end, you always look and see how the young guys, really unfortunate for Dylan Sandberg. You never want to see anybody get hurt at training camp. There was no training camp last year. He was looking forward to getting into some preseason games. And now this happens, and unfortunate, because this was a big camp for him as well. And even Ville Heinola, although Heinola has got a bit of a step on there because he's played some NHL games, so I think the organization has a better handle on what he can bring. And then you watch Eric Comrie and see how he's going to do in that backup role, although that's going to happen in the preseason games, not now. But it's more the new faces that you kind of keep an eye on now. I mean, Cole Perfetti does things. He always had an old adage, never look down at a program to find somebody. That player, if you're interested in that player needs to stand out, and you need to say, oh, geez, who was that player? You know, Cole Perfetti's done some real good things. So, you know, and then the veterans, Nikolai Ehlers has been good and Kyle Connor's been good. They're all good, but they should be at this time of the year. So, but it's more the new faces that you keep an eye on.
You know, Dennis, isn't that one of the biggest advantages for this Winnipeg Jets team with the moves that Kevin Cheveldayoff made over the summer, is that that opportunity to insulate the young guys, not have to thrust them into roles and give them the opportunity to continue their development at the AHL level? I know we live in an instant gratification society where guys have to be in the NHL immediately, but to give a guy like, if Heinola can't crack that top six, top minutes with the Moose, to give David Gustafson that same opportunity, to give Simon Lundmark that same opportunity, to give all of these young guys, to not have to force them to have that high pressure of the NHL. And I just think it's such a good opportunity that this Jets team hasn't really had in the last little bit, is not to have to use those young guys in those roles.
All those young guys come in with that same attitude. I'm going to make this team. There's a spot there. I'm going to make the team. But you're bang on. Good organizations don't rush players. They don't put themselves in that situation where they have to rush those guys. Cole Perfetti can still play junior. He's 19 years of age. So there's no rush for him to get to the National Hockey League as much as he would like to get there. Same as Lundmark. Lundmark's done some good things here in the early going as well. Handles the puck really well. But those guys, Gustafson's another guy. Yesterday was a really good scrimmage for him. It seemed like the puck was following him around. So those guys will all get a look. Paul Maurice touched on that. The first three, four preseason games, it's going to be a very young lineup. So they're going to get a chance to see what they can do at the NHL level. But you never It's important for young players to play, especially the skilled players. Cole Perfetti playing on a fourth line, not playing every game, that's not going to help his development. He needs to play where he handles the puck as much as he possibly can. Now, that's not to say that he's not going to find a spot on the Winnipeg Jets roster. Once we get into preseason games, it's wide open for all those guys that you mentioned. So it's up to them to jump ahead of other people. You know, we talked yesterday about Sammy Niku. That's what happened with Sammy Niku. He got jumped on the depth chart by Dylan Sandberg, by Billy Hainala, and all of a sudden that opportunity that was there, it was gone, and that's how quickly it disappears. So players understand that, but at the same time, the organization knows that rushing a player into the lineup in the long run doesn't help you, and some of those players that we talked about certainly will start with the Manitoba Moose. They'll get the opportunity in the preseason, and then who knows during the course of the year with injuries and with COVID and everything else, what kind of an opportunity they get to play.
Dennis, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, it's the holdover from this Jets defense from a few years back is, of course, Josh Morrissey. Are you expecting that we're going to see sort of a return to form for Josh Morrissey, given the reinforcements that have come on the Jets blue line? We know that, you know, shouldering the burden of being the last man standing after you lose Sherratt, Trouba, Myers, Byfuglien was a lot for the young player. We know that last year in this offseason, of course, he lost his father, and that's obviously very difficult. You know, so are you expecting sort of a return to form for Josh Morrissey, knowing that he has, so I'm going to say, you know, for lack of a better term, better support alongside him on the Jets blue line?
No doubt. I think you're 100% correct on that. There's a bit of a smile on Josh Morrissey's face when he looks around, and he's playing with Nate Schmidt right now, and that's probably going to be where they start. You go back to the outdoor game in Regina and go back then to the outdoor game here in Winnipeg. Josh Morrissey was the only defenseman left in that three-year stretch, you know, and there was such a turnover on the back end. There was a lot of pressure on him. He looked around the room and said, wow, I'm the only guy that's still here. And now all of a sudden there is that support. He can look around at Brendan Dillon, and he can look around at Nate Schmidt, and Neil Pionk was a real good addition. Then you got, you know, Dylan DeMello that's steady back there. Nathan Beaulieu is healthy and back. So there's no doubt, I think Josh Morrissey can concentrate more on his game. It was a tough winter for him last year. There's no denying that with what was going on with his father, the fact that he couldn't see him as much as he wanted to, and everything else that goes along with that. So, you know, and then you add what you were talking about, the veteran defenseman that they've added back there. He's walking around with a bit of a smile on his face, and why not? And I think it will be an easier year for Josh Morrissey just from that standpoint.
Dennis Bayak is the television voice of the Winnipeg Jets. It may only be the preseason, but you know that he is going to be in regular season form when the Jets have their first exhibition game. Dennis will be on the call
alongside. I can't wait for that first bang, bang, Dennis. I'm looking for it. Nobody likes the bang, bang more than me.
It's preseason. Let's just put a little sticker breaks on here. You know. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, all right, take care.
Well, see Dennis. There he goes. Dennis Bayak, good friend of the show. You can catch the Jets preseason games on TSN3 along with 60 of the regular season games. Let's take our first break of the morning. When we come back, we'll talk about the interview with Dennis. We'll look at the Jets defense. John Mattis from The Score is going to join us in about 40 minutes time. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, we're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube, we're live on Twitter, we're live on Facebook, and of course it's available for podcast shortly after the conclusion of the show. While you're here, if you haven't yet done so, be sure to smash that like button, ring that subscribe bell, give us a thumbs up, whatever I've missed, also do that as well. That way you'll get alerted each and every time we go live here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to just make a note, quick note, there won't be any post-game show for the preseason games. We'll start those up on the Jets' opening road trip out west to California. So what's that, about 2.5 weeks away, I think?
Was
that,
yeah.
Is that the 13th of October?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. October 13th. That's a Wednesday night. Anaheim. We're gonna burn the midnight oil after that Jets Ducks game with the Illegal Curve post game show. That's returning this year. So you can stay tuned for that. Join us after each and every Winnipeg Jets game, and we will of course break it down after the game, and then break it down again on Saturday morning. Always great.
I'm going to throw this out there. It is weird. And I realize that the last year and a half has been weird with the pandemic. And, you know, last season started in January. But in a normal season, the fact that the Jets home opener is October 21st, 10 days from Halloween, it just seems like that's a late home opener. But obviously, you know, we're going to have to wait, till the fifth game for a home game. I just wanted to throw out there that, you know, it seems like still a long time away. It's about a month still.
It's true. It is a little less than a month. That's good math on your part there, Mr. Ginsburg. Always good to hear from Dennis. And, you know, this Winnipeg Jets team, the whole organization seems to almost have a feeling of a little bit of like rebirth around them right now, Dave. And mm-hmm. I know that, like I said, hope springs eternal anytime it's the preseason, but you can just sort of feel the rejuvenation that is permeating throughout the dressing room, permeating throughout the entire organization with all of the additions, especially the ones on the back end. And that's where we're going to shift our focus to the defense, you know, because the defensive pairings have been sort of established through the first couple of days of training camp. Josh Morrissey along with Nate Schmidt, and you can see that being just such an up-tempo, a go-go-go pairing, given how well they both skate, given how they're both sort of offensively inclined. Then you got Brendan Dillon and Neil Pionk, and Brendan Dillon definitely made himself known early in training camp. Couple big hits. He had Kyle Connor lined up for one that he wisely backed off on because he could have really done some damage to the Winnipeg Jets winger. And then that third pairing of Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello, and, you know, DeMello just being such a good security blanket for a player who had a really nice year last year in Logan Stanley. So just the difference in the defense, the six names I just mentioned, never mind Ville Heinola and Nate Beaulieu, who I haven't really mentioned yet, versus what the Jets have had the last couple of years, the difference is just so overwhelming.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And we've been talking about it all summer, and now you're actually seeing it come to fruition, is that, you know, these guys bring a presence. Brendan Dillon, who may be my new favorite interview because he's constantly calling himself Brendan Dillon's going to be the best Brendan Dillon. Like, I think that's going to be very entertaining throughout the course of the season.
Jimmy's going to get you, Kramer.
Yeah, Jimmy's exactly. Going to get you. Jimmy's got to jump. So I think that you're seeing what these guys, I think Dennis just talked about it. That idea of Josh Morrissey's looking around and it's not all on him, or as Chupac once said, all eyes on me. I think it's a function of,
I didn't have Dave dropping Tupac in my Illegal Curve bingo card this morning. As
all right. Well, every once in a while. So I think it just becomes a function of what I talked about with Dennis, which was that idea of insulating the younger players, not needing Dylan Sandberg, regardless of the injury, which obviously that high ankle sprain is brutal. And like Dennis said, you know, especially for a guy who was going to come and have really his first Jets training camp, it just is brutal for him. But the truth is you didn't want Dylan Sandberg having to, like, he wasn't going to be in your top six. He was going to be with the Moose. Johnny Kovacevic, same thing. Ville Heinola is the only question mark for me. People are like already just assuming he's down on the farm. I don't know that yet. Like, I would say that Ville Heinola still has a shot. So I wouldn't, you know, say that. And again, I'm not going to say it as a bad thing that Ville Heinola, if he has to play with the Moose, it's necessarily a terrible thing. I'm just saying you don't want Ville Heinola sitting in the press box, you know, playing every third.
It's day three of training camp.
Right, exactly.
So, right? Dave, yeah. Like, let's not set anything in stone.
That's right.
Aside from the veterans, I mean, let's just take a step back. I mean, there's a good chance that Ville Heinola plays with the Moose, but let's just relax here a little bit.
Absolutely. And that's the whole point. I think that I guess what it comes down to is the established veteran guys, you know, Pionk, DeMello, Morrissey, Schmidt, and Dillon. Those five are set in stone, right? Mm-hmm. There's no issue there. And from the Jets' point of view, what a luxury that is to have five established defensemen set in stone. Logan Stanley seems like he's fairly entrenched, but like I said, if there's one spot that's available, I would say that Ville Heinola could done for that one spot with Logan Stanley. That's why I wouldn't write his name, as he said earlier in the show, you don't write necessarily that one in pen.
Sure.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We'll see. And again, lots can happen between day one of training camp and the start of the regular season. But it's such a huge, to your point, Drew. Oh, damn it, I said it again. But to with the idea of, it's that idea of this there's a rebirth with this Jets defense that we haven't seen. And you had the forwards, you have the goaltender, and now you have the defense, and they're feeling good about themselves, and with good reason, because there's a much more solid core. You don't have to kind of put, you have a top pairing defensive group like that would be in the top five of the NHL. No, you know, Morrissey and Schmidt aren't going to be considered a top 10 defensive pairing, but they're every defensive pairing.
I think for the Jets D though is probably top 10 though, Dave.
Well, that's what I mean though. But I'm saying like collectively, this
group, some of their parts, right?
That's right. Is now a much better totality than what we've seen in the past. And I think because of that, it's all come together for this Winnipeg Jets team. And just last point up for me, that idea of insulating. So those young guys like a Simon Lundmark, you know, a Johnny Kovacevic, Dennis said it, and I agree. There's going to be injuries. We see it every year. Guys get injured. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to call these guys up. They'll get games in the NHL. So Kovacevic, he's going to play in the NHL. I think Samberg's going to play in the NHL. Heinola's going to play in the NHL. All these guys are going to play NHL games. But you're not rushing them in and saying, okay, you need to play 25 minutes and save this team because, you know, we just lost our top guy.
Well, you know, to your point, sorry, Ezzy, I mean, the sort of rule of thumb is you need 10 NHL defensemen to get through a season. And, you know, you look at, you know, Niku being subtracted off the roster, this contract being terminated, mutually terminated earlier this week, and you look at the injury to Samberg now, you do wonder if the Jets are maybe a little thin when it comes to veteran defensemen on the back end. You know, Beaulieu obviously is going to be your seven. I don't think there's any question about that. He's a guy that could, you know, if everything works out great for the Jets all season long and Nathan Beaulieu sits in the press box all year long, not great for Beaulieu, but he gets paid his NHL salary and it's not bad for the Winnipeg Jets because of where, you know, that means that things are healthy. But you just look at it and, you know, no Niku. And again, Niku had fallen out of favor and the writing was on the wall there. But Samberg and Heinola were probably your next, you know, two men up. Or Samberg and Heinola, if Heinola isn't going to make the Jets, that was going to be probably your top pairing at the Manitoba Moose level. So that does hurt. So you wonder, and this is something I'd be, you know, it won't be for a while. Do the Jets maybe keep an eye on the waiver wire later in training camp to see if there is a veteran defenseman that can be had for basically nothing, who can maybe just be a gap bridger between the NHL and the AHL levels to make sure you have that 8, 9, 10 defensemen if you do run into a litany of injuries, as we've seen this Jets defense have, you know, in previous seasons, and all defense have in previous seasons.
Yeah, did Sammy Vatanen sign anywhere? He was a guy, you know, that I know that we talked about for a couple of years. Like Vatanen is that type of player, right, Drew? Like a guy that you get on a 1-year deal, who you know is most likely going to be at the very best a third pairing guy, but most likely a seventh or eighth defenseman. I don't think Vatanen has signed with anybody. He was most recently Devils, wasn't he? Or he might have been on another team after the Devils, but he's bounced around a little bit.
I believe he still is a UFA, like, but you mentioned.
I think it was with Dallas.
Yeah. And you're right. It was Dallas. And Vatanen is a guy, the reason why I mention him is it's like, you know, that kind of 30, 31-year-old defenseman, that type of player. But the point that Drew made, I think, is an accurate one. Like, you wonder, and, you know, Dave just mentioned, you know, Johnny Kovacevic, who's obviously going to be in the Moose top four. You know, that means that with Samberg out, I realize, you know, different type of defenseman here, but and different side. But Kovacevic is a guy, Dave, that you wonder, you know, does he maybe get a little bit more of an opportunity in the NHL? Obviously, you know, we know, to Dave's point, you know, this is going to be, you know, a pretty, we know what the Jets top six is going to be. Maybe Ville Heinola, you know, leapfrogs, you know, Logan Stanley. But aside from that, we know who the top six is going to be. So yeah, you probably, you know, might see the Jets bring in a veteran defenseman. And you know, Space Explorer is mentioning Nelson Noje. He's another, you know, veteran defenseman, you know, that probably, you know, might be a guy that the Jets call upon if there are more injuries. But yeah, with Niku now a member of the Montreal Canadiens and Samberg out, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or 4 to 8 weeks, you know, the Jets now all of a sudden don't have as many defensemen as they did a week ago, right? So that is something, you know, a bit of a storyline that has emerged here through the first 2 days of training camp.
I was going to say Nojé. I mean, Nojé was a staple of the taxi squad last year. He played 12 games in total last year with the Manitoba Moose, sort of in the same role like Dominic Toninato, who only got into about 12 games or so last season. So, you know, you wonder where he's at this stage of his career. But Nelson Nojé has certainly been he's been a fixture of the organization for so long, but a guy who, you know, it does some decent things at the AHL level, but is clearly almost, you know, if you want to use a baseball reference, at the quadruple A level, where he's not quite NHL level, but he's also probably pretty good at the AHL level, not quite able to break through that ceiling, but that's another guy. And then I can see that Charles Shaw in the chat room here is naming some other veteran defensemen who are still UFA. And I don't think it's really a huge thing that's keeping Kevin Cheveldayoff up at night, but it is worth noting that the Jets, you know, are a little bit thin on the back end after you get through, I'd say, number eight. That would be probably where, you know, you can get to with Beaulieu and Heinola being included there. One thing I'm looking for, and we talked to Dennis about this a couple minutes ago, is Josh Morrissey. I'm going to keep a close eye on him during training camp and certainly the start of the season, because I think that I don't ever believe Josh Morrissey is as bad as some of the advanced stats and the analytics would say he has been the last couple of years. I think he was a quality player who too much was asked of him, and he was almost put in a bit of an impossible situation. And that's really, I think he was dealt a bit of a bad hand just by the fact that the Jets lost so many defensemen. I'd expect Josh Morrissey to have a better season this year and really bounce back. And is he ever going to be fully worth the contract that he signed? I'm not sure that he's going to be full value for that, but that's not his fault. I'm looking for him to have a better year.
Absolutely. Bless you, Drew. I agree. And I think the Morrissey contract is fine. I don't know why people – I'm not going to get into that. The Morrissey contract is absolutely fine. He's a great defenseman. And, I mean, yeah, did the numbers take a bit of a hit last year when you talk about, you know, expected goals for and against? Yes. But playing with Tucker Poolman, you know, no offense to Poolman, I've always been a big fan of his, you know, since the UND days. But, you know, he didn't have a very good year last year. And, obviously, he got himself a contract with the Canucks. But we know that, you know, Tucker Poolman – especially when you go against, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs offense or the Edmonton Oilers offense like they did last year in the Canadian division, a guy like Poolman, he struggled, right? So a lot of that had to do, you know, Morrissey's struggles, I think. And yeah, we talked about the off ice with his dad, and it's obviously, you know, horrible. But hockey players are human beings, guys. We've been covering, you know, the NHL and the Jets, you know, long enough. I mean, these things do factor in. The fact that, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois had to travel and he had to, you know, sit in quarantine and he didn't have his best off-season training. Like, these things do linger on throughout the season. Even though, you know, we like to say that these guys are robots and they just speak in cliches and they just kind of live, breathe, and eat hockey. A lot of them do. I mean, they go through things off the ice that affects their play on the ice. So I think it is a good point by Drew. You know, Morrissey, I think this, if there's any player that you could use the word rebirth for, it's Morrissey, right? And he gets to play with Nate Schmidt, who not only is a talented defenseman and is most likely, you know, going to form the top pair with Morrissey. The guy is just somebody who you want to be around. Dave had a good 30-minute chat with him about a month and a half ago.
And I don't want to spend 30 minutes with Dave. Can you imagine nice Nate Schmidt must be if he wants to spend 30 minutes with Dave?
Johnny Kovacevich did as well in the backyard. So I think there's a lot of Jets and Moose players that want to take, you know, 20 to 30 minutes to speak with Dave M. It's a pleasure.
It's the Dave M. bump.
Absolutely. But yeah, Morrissey is a guy that, and again, I think he might be a bit of a long shot to make Team Canada, but I do think he is on that radar. I really do. I think it's going to be very tough, you know, to crack that, especially when you consider, you know, some of the younger defensemen like Cale Makar, you know, who weren't options for, you know, Team Canada, obviously, last time they participated in the Olympics. But I do think, you know, that might be a little bit of a factor. But I think more so, Morrissey wants to get back to establishing himself as a top pairing defenseman. He was obviously a top pairing defenseman last year, but I'm talking about more in terms of production. And I think having a guy like Schmidt with him will help him just as much offensively as it will defensively. So yeah, I'm with you, Drew. I mean, I'm a little bit biased. I've always been like a huge Morrissey fan. I think the guy just is, he not only is he just a good person, the guy has a good head on his shoulders, and he's just a smart hockey player. You know, that does things right. So I agree with you. I'm expecting a big season out of Morrissey, and the fact that he's got a veteran like Nate Schmidt to play with this year is only going to, you know, mean that he's going to have a better season than last year.
Well, you know, Dave, I put it on the screen for the comment from T. Kona Pauly talking about Nate Schmidt is also looking to have a bounce back season. And I think that's, you know, a worthwhile point. You know, Nate Schmidt definitely had a, you know, the Vancouver Canucks were a tire fire last season, and Nate Schmidt, for whatever reason, you know, when the Canucks acquired him from Vegas, a lot of people praised that move because they thought that they would be getting the Nate Schmidt that you saw in Vegas, who was a very effective player. You know, he wasn't that in Vancouver. The you know, is that his fault? Is that the organization's fault? Is that the entire Canucks team last year? Time will tell. But Nate Schmidt is another guy on the Jets' back end who is looking for that bounce back. He's looking to get into a comfortable situation where he can really sort of settle in. I mean, look, he's under contract for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. So the Jets are counting on Nate Schmidt to seamlessly fit next to Josh Morrissey, because Morrissey's under contract for the next, well, at least I think it's 7 years, including this season. So, you know, if Schmidt and Morrissey can make some beautiful music together this coming season, that's hugely important for the Jets, because
it could be
Jets-
a good name for a country band, actually, Morrissey and Schmidt, like, you know, like Hall and Oates or something like that.
Sure, Brooks and Dunn, if you want. You know, yep. Thank you. But, you know, I think that's just another, you know, I think both of those guys are looking to, you know, bounce back. And I wonder if that's going to be sort of not comforting for both of them, but just another extra layer of motivation. Two guys who are playing together, who I do think sort of complement each other's style and can play a very similar style. And as a result, I think they're going to be able to really, the Jets and certainly the players themselves hope that they're going to revert back to previous success and previous form that we've seen for both of them.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like, as he referenced that conversation I had with Nate Schmidt, and one of the things he talked about was how he had already envisioned playing alongside Josh Morrissey, and how he was able to kind of, he knew the kind of player Josh Morrissey was. Now, he didn't limit it to Josh Morrissey. He said with Brendan Dillon, he said with Neil Pionk, so it wasn't as if he was just solely focused on pairing up beside Josh Morrissey. Mm-hmm. But we knew that that was probably where this team was probably going to head, at least early in the season. And I think you're 100% right. I think that both players, you know, Josh Morrissey is looking to, as his point, like Tucker Pullman, and it's no fault of Tucker Pullman. Tucker Pullman is a decent third pair defenseman, but he's not a first pairing defenseman, which is what the Jets asked him to be.
That's now not something on Tucker Pullman. Now he's an overpaid defenseman, thanks to the Canucks, but good for Tucker.
He was underpaid by the Jets, so his payment from the Canucks is probably balancing it out. But the truth is, he wasn't a first pairing defenseman. And so you had him in that spot. It was not a recipe for success, and it hampered Josh Morrissey as well. So I think with a guy like Nate Schmidt, to your point, Drew, who's going to bounce back, who's looking to bounce back, who's looking to change that narrative from what he had in that one season in Vancouver back to the way it was in Vegas, you know, with a group that he's maybe more comfortable with, he knows a lot of the guys. We always joke about the Minnesota connections, a lot of that. He's from St. Cloud. His family is close, you know. Obviously, once the border opens up, they'll be able to come to Winnipeg. And he said, I think he's made a joke about the Schmidt family. Once they get to Winnipeg, watch out, they're a loud crew. So I think there's a lot for that, where he can just be home if he needs to, you know, quick, whatever it is, 5-hour drive down to St. Cloud, Minnesota, and that sort of idea. He knows that this is a group that is going for it. The Canucks, we weren't sure. Right. When you get traded to the Canucks, when you're with Vancouver, you knew you're getting dumped from a team that's a Stanley Cup contender to a team that has up and coming talent, but isn't there. And now when you're coming to the Jets, talking about that idea of bouncing back, talking about that idea of reinvigorating oneself. Well, what are the Jets? We've talked about it in last week's show. This isn't a team that's happy to be there, happy to make the playoffs. This is a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations. Now, Nate Schmidt himself said to me that right now, Tampa is that team that is the Stanley Cup champion. So nobody is ahead of Tampa, even though they had significant losses during the offseason. But right now, Tampa is that benchmark, and you have to get to them. But Nate Schmidt and the Jets know, and fans know, and we know that this Jets team isn't in it just to be a contender. They want to be an upper echelon team. And so guys like Schmidt and Morrissey are going to be a huge part to making this Jets team get to that level.
The biggest difference, guys, is going to be the way these guys move the puck. Because there's a lot of similarities between Trouba and Schmidt's game, if you think about it, right? Just the puck moving ability, being offensive minded. You know, Schmidt's a guy that can throw his weight around too. I don't think, you know, any of us would say he's as physical as Trouba was, but that's really what you should be thinking about here, in that when the Jets were having their most success, right, 2017 through, let's say, 2019 for a couple of years, Morrissey and Trouba were, because of their offensive talent, were able to do things that Morrissey and Poolman, you know, they just couldn't do. Same thing with Morrissey and DeMello, right? So that pair is going to be a key. And Pionk and Dylan, same thing. Like Dylan's 6'4" and 200-plus pounds, but he's a guy that can move the puck better than Derek Forbort, all due respect to Forbort, right? So I think that's going to be the biggest difference, you know, in that kind of east-to-west kind of breakout speed game. I think is going to be something that the Jets lacked, especially in that second round, guys, because let's be honest, in that second round and not having Scheifele, you know, was awful. Like, I mean, that didn't help at all. I think if Scheifele was healthy, I've said this before on the show, if Scheifele's not suspended, pardon me, I think that series, it's not a sweep. So I think absolutely, you know, the fact that these guys are going to be able to bring more of a puck moving ability, you know, that's going to allow Paul Maurice to change how this team plays stylistically.
And I think that's certainly something that, you know, worth watching in the preseason, because that's the biggest difference. You know, the Jets have been so passive the last couple of years by virtue of the personnel that they had to deal with, that was almost the way they had to be. Now, I would not expect, you know, passivity at all. And we talked about this the last couple of weeks, and we talked about it with Dennis earlier on the broadcast. This should be an up-tempo team. This should be a fun team to watch. The last couple of years, the team wasn't very fun because it was very much a transition-based team where they would try and capitalize on quick strike offense. Certainly, they have the capability to be a quick strike offense this year, but I'm also expecting them to be more aggressive, to play more of the ice in the opponent's zone. I would expect them to be more of an analytical darling than they have been the last number of years. And of course, being an analytical darling doesn't immediately or necessarily guarantee you any more victories. But I would hope that the Jets, given the roster that they have, given the back end, given the forward group, which we know is still as talented as very many throughout the league, are going to be playing in the opponent's zone more often than not. And I think just that idea of not having to be so reliant and so almost defense first, I think is going to be a big change for this team. And I think is going to be a team, something that provides an extra boost of energy for the players, especially those players that were here previously and remember what it was like in 17-18 and then remember how the team has had to change, and now they can hopefully change back to how they were. Because that was 17-18 team. That team was one of the most fun teams that I can remember in a long time, because everything about them was focused about being aggressive in the offensive zone, not fire wagon hockey, but that was the skill set they had available to them.
Well, look at what happened in the playoffs, right, guys? Like, the Jets were able to keep, you know, that Oilers series relatively low scoring, right? Like, we know McDavid and Draisaitl, with the exception of one game, were completely shut down. But then look what happened in the second round when you met a defensive juggernaut like the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know if they're going to be, you know, that much of a defensive juggernaut this year without, you know, Shea Weber. That's really going to hurt them. But the way the Canadiens were playing defensively, I mean, the Jets essentially, you know, ran into a team. They just didn't have any solutions, right? Like, you can't just all of a sudden change the way you play, you know, from one week to the next, right? So I think it's a good point that you make. I mean, the thing that stands out to me about that team from 2017 to 18, and I guess if you want to go to 2019 as well, when they got knocked out by the Blues in the first round, is, you know, the Tanev Kopp Lowry line, right? Like, that was the line that always seemed to give the Jets energy. Forget, you know, the fact that all obviously, you know, Connor Scheifele and Wheeler obviously had a great, you know, year that year that the Jets went to the Western Conference Final. But, you know, with Tanev creating a little bit of chaos with, you know, his speed and his physicality, and then you had Kopp and Lowry doing the same essentially, right? That's what stands out to me. And they're obviously going to try to replicate that a little bit, you know, with Stastny, Lowry, and Vesalainen in there on the third line, or, you know, some combination of, you know, Lowry, Kopp, Vesalainen, and Stastny. So I think there's absolutely, I think, an appetite from the Jets coaching staff, you know, to be a little bit more aggressive, to be a little bit more creative. And it makes sense, guys, because when you have guys like Ehlers and Connor and Scheifele, like, these are creative, fast, offensive-minded players, right? Like, this isn't, you know, a Columbus Blue Jackets type of team where you're trying to win, you know, 2-1, 3-2 games on the backs of your good goaltending. Obviously, you're going to have the great goaltending from Hellebuck, but there's no doubt that this team is going to be able to do things that they weren't able to do the last couple of years.
Yeah, exactly right, Ezzy. I mean, I think that's the part that's going to be most interesting to watch, and that's why, you know, I'm glad that Paul Maurice sort of acknowledged that in some of his early comments, Dave, saying, you know, the personnel has changed. I need to change my system. I need to change how we are playing as a result. And I think that as long as the coach sees that, that's a good starting point, because the concern would be that the coach looks at the roster and says, oh, no, we still got to do what we've done before because we had, quote unquote, some success last year. But this team should be offensive minded first and foremost, because that's, I think, where their strength is, not to the absolute abdication of defensive responsibility, of course. But that's really what I'm looking for in this preseason. And you might not see it as much in the preseason until you get to the regular season, when you get your starting 12 and your starting 12 forwards and starting six defensemen sort of on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. We've talked about how they're going to be using a lot of the young players and as best they can. Obviously, a guy like Dylan Sandberg won't be available, but, you know, you're going to see Svechnikov, you're going to see Gustafsson, you're going to see Perfetti. Those are the players that are likely going to be playing quite a bit of ice. And so, you know, to the idea that Drew, that we're looking to see certain guys, you're going to see that closer towards the end of training camp, when, you know, as they've sent some guys down to the Moose will have their own training camp coming up probably in about 10 days. So once they've shrunk things down, then you'll have a little bit of a tighter idea. But there's no question about it. Like I said, this is a team that's going to have to change their style. And Murat, as I referenced earlier, talked about the first couple of days of training camp, how there's been a subtle, Paul Maurice mentioned in his availability on day one, and they're seeing it now, and it's early and it's hard because, as he said, it's really difficult to gauge anything when you're in day two of training camp and make some grand pronouncement that this is what it's going to look like for the entire season. Dennis said it as well. It's very hard to say this is what our style is going to be when you have a lot of guys in camp. Now, the Jets are fortunate in that they don't have a huge, like the Flames, you know, probably like 50, 60 guys, whatever it is. They don't have that sort of impediment, but they still have a lot of young guys that they want to take a look at. So they're not going to worry about systems to the same degree. And the Moose and the Jets generally run the same systems anyways. So there's a lot of layover, but you're going to have some new guys. Like I said, a Simon Lundmark, who Arvid Holm, I mean, was a goaltender, but that those guys who don't have the background within the Jets framework, you know, even Tyrell Bauer, was he a seventh round pick in 2020?
Seventh round pick.
Yeah. You know, he's a guy who didn't get a training camp last year with the Winnipeg Jets because, of course, they didn't have that sort of rookie camp and sort of thing. So you're getting an opportunity to see a lot of these guys that you want to take a look at before you send him back to junior or other guys to play with the Moose, that sort of idea. So to me, I think it's one of those situations where you're going to see it closer towards the end of training camp. You'll get a better idea. You'll be able to see how is this team running. And right now, tomorrow's game against Ottawa Senators, folks, you're not going to see, oh, well, the Jets are playing an up-tempo style, because, again, I don't know who's going to be there exactly, but it may be a little different from what we see in the last game.
I believe Comrie's in net tomorrow. I think they've announced that already, if I'm not mistaken, that Comrie is going to be in the goalie for tomorrow's game. And then, of course, you're right. You know, especially early, the first few preseason games, the team is obligated to dress a certain number of veterans, but it's like three or four veteran players or something like that. So you're going to see, it's going to very much be an AHL roster tomorrow. And Paul Maurice even said that early on in training camp, that, you know, the results of these games do not matter. This, you know, these exhibition games are an opportunity.
Do they ever matter?
No, they never matter. I mean, the preseason games to me are the biggest, are such a absolute rip.
I feel a rant coming, Dave.
That's not a rant, honestly, because it's been resolved. It's been discussed and resolved, and there's nothing that anyone's going to be doing for it.
There should be two or three as opposed to seven or eight.
That's right.
Well, just charging anybody for these games is an insult to people and their hardworking dollars.
We don't get charged, Drew. We have media passes.
I am not speaking about us, as we are fortunate enough, but that if you're a season ticket holder, you pay for these games. And I find that to be so insulting to, you know, in a lot of different ways, and insulting to the paying customer, because it's not like the players are getting paid for these games either. So, I mean, just everything about preseason, anything. And it's not a hockey thing strictly. It's also about a, it's also a football thing, and it's also a basketball thing. It's less so a baseball thing, because preseason baseball is something that people, you know, season ticket holders are charged for, because it happens in Florida, it happens in Arizona. But just the fact that people have to spend their good hard-earned money and pretend that they're actually getting a value for their dollar for these games is just another sort of kick in the teeth of the pay, to the paying customer. And that's not a comment about True North. That's just a comment about sports in general, that it still bothers me to this day. You know, they, anyways, don't need to rehash that any further than
end
that.
Rant.
End rant. It's not even a rant. It's not just a, just a general commentary about society, if you will.
The games towards the end are the ones that, that really matter in the preseason, if they matter at all, to your point, right? Yes. So, like, let's just take everything with a grain of salt, especially the first two or three games. You're going to see a lot of players that are going to spend a significant amount of time in the American Hockey League or other leagues. And then once you get closer, you know, to October 13th and the opener versus the Anaheim Ducks, that's what the roster is going to look like in terms of, you know, the Jets opening 12 forwards and six defensemen and everything like that. But yeah, there's certainly, you know, good opportunities for players like David Gustafson and Evgeny Svechnikov and Dominic Toninato and some of the guys that are, you know, gunning for those fourth and third line roles. You know, there's a good chance that these guys, you know, will impress early on, and that's going to, you know, heavily factor in for Paul Maurice and who he decides to have on his opening night roster, right? But I don't think you're going to get much argument from us, Drew, that there should be less exhibition games as opposed to more.
No question at all. I'll tell you what, let's take our second break of the morning. When we come back, John Mattis from The Score is going to join us. You know, training camp is underway in all 32 NHL markets. We'll talk to John about what his thoughts are early in the season, early in the preseason, I suppose, and everything that's going around the NHL, because it's certainly been a very newsworthy week. Much more on the Winnipeg Jets to come. Stick around. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Thrilled that you're able to join us on this Saturday morning. We do it each and every Saturday morning. And as I mentioned, when this regular season starts, we will also do it after the post-game shows. When the Winnipeg Jets are in action, join us on our YouTube channel, join us on our Facebook page, join us on our Twitter feed. The Illegal Curve post-game show goes live when the Winnipeg Jets games end each and every time. Gentlemen, John Mattis of The Score going to join us coming up here in a few minutes. You know, I this isn't Winnipeg Jets related, but I found the Jack Eichel press conference from earlier this week where the Sabres general manager addressed the situation with Jack Eichel to be absolutely fascinating. You know, you have a player, and obviously things have gone completely wrong with the Sabres and Eichel, and it's complete poison there. And, you know, the organization, the Buffalo Sabres organization is a disaster and continues to be a disaster. But I just find it, it sits poorly with me that a team wants to tell a player, a person, a human being, how to make decisions about his own body. That to me just really seems sour in my mouth. That, you know, that's a player doesn't have control over their own medical decision making, and that is, I think, at the core of the problem in Buffalo. Is that, you know, they obviously can't come to an agreement here. But if you're the Sabres, don't you have to sort of take a step back? And that, you know, you can't strap the guy down to a table and make him get the surgery. So what is your end game when you really try and make a player or you demand that a player has a medical procedure he disagrees with?
Right. And for those who aren't, you know, super familiar with it, basically there's an argument, you know, happening between Eichel's camp and the Sabres organization and medical staff in terms of what exact procedure, you know, he's going to have. And I think you're right, Drew, that is impacting, you know, the Sabres' ability to trade him, right? Because we talked about this with Chris Johnston a couple of weeks ago. I think ideally the Sabres wanted to trade him back in late July at the draft and possibly use a draft pick, right? Because we assume Eichel is going to get a pretty good haul, right? Like, it's going to be a roster player, a draft pick. Like, I assume it's going to be a couple draft picks and probably a couple players or a first round pick and two or three players, right? Like, Eichel is a top 10, even top five center in the league. But yeah, obviously with the captaincy being stripped and everything like that, I mean, it's just gone from bad to worse. So it's kind of tough to really gauge the situation, right? Because if you're a team that's trading for Jack Eichel, don't you want to have him in your lineup as soon as you can? And it seems like he's not going to be back until when? Early 2022, right? Like, it's going to be a while before he's played. So I think, you know, this whole situation is really unfortunate for a team that's trying to, you know, get back to feeling good and get back into a playoff spot. With the way that that roster is constructed, I think they're going to be a very bad team again this year.
Yeah, there's no question they're going to be a very poor team. I would agree with that. We're pleased to be joined now on the show by the senior hockey writer for The Score. John Mattis joins us on the program. John, good morning. Nice to see you. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning. How are things?
Things are well. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been a while. And I was just thinking, last time I was on, you guys were commenting on my beard. And then I'm like, wow, it's been a while. I should maybe touch this thing up.
No way, John. About the show great. That you don't need to do anything.
We are a beard-friendly show. There's no question about that with this. And Ezzy normally has a much fuller beard than what he's sporting currently. But no, you are on a beard-friendly show here, John. Awesome. So we were talking about it before you just came on. We were talking about the Sabres demanding that Jack Eichel go through a medical procedure. We don't demand any sort of medical procedures or facial hair procedures of our guests on this show. So you're welcome to sport whatever kind of facial hair you want or don't want to sport.
I appreciate that. I mean, you guys are gentlemen. You guys, you know how to do this, right?
We're benevolent in that way. That's very true. You know, John, I want to get your opinion on that. You know, you watch Kevin Adams in his press conference earlier this week, and it's just fascinating to me because this is a general manager of an NHL franchise, you know, demanding that a player go through a medical procedure as if the player doesn't have control over his own body and over his own health. And I know that the collective bargaining agreement allows for, you know, for teams to make the final decisions when it comes to player health and things of that nature. But I just don't understand what the end game would be for the Sabres to sort of draw lines in the sand there. It's not like they can strap them to a table and cut them open themselves. I just don't understand how they're sort of playing this out within the confines of the Sabres organization.
Yeah, I feel like they have not played their cards right here. And maybe that's a gross, you know, understatement. Maybe that's really obvious. But they had a chance there to give in to his ways, to his preference, and then trade him or trade him before he has a surgery, but sort of not make a big fuss about this tension. Because clearly the solution or the resolution here was that Jack Eichel's not going to play for the Buffalo Sabres ever again. And I guess there is a chance that he will, given it's gone this far. We're now about to enter a new season. And, you know, at some point he's going to come back. And if he's not traded, I guess he comes back to the Sabres. But that relationship is ruined. It perhaps was on its way to ruin before this even happened, given the state of that franchise. But there is something just...
Everybody's got a little bit of a cough or a cold. I was sneezing earlier. John's coughing. Take your time, John. No worries at all. We don't want you choking on the show.
I was telling Ezra via text when he asked if I wanted to come on. I'm like, listen, I got a really annoying cough right now. If you guys want to have me on and I can mute myself, sure. But just a heads up on that. So, but anyways, with Eichel, I think the Sabres' best route right now would just to give in. I know it's going to be embarrassing. I know they're going to lose even more leverage than they already have lost in the past with this whole situation. But I can't envision this getting any better. I don't know about you guys, but you think about how long it's dragged out, how long it's been since Eichel played a hockey game. That's only going to continue as you push this thing down the road. And then also just the fact that they need to get something for this guy and turn the page. I mean, they tanked to get McDavid / Eichel, and now they're tanking again. So do you want to move on from the Eichel era now, or do you want to keep dragging that out and you don't get your assets until later? I just feel like it's a lose-lose situation for Kevin Adams as the GM there, given what has unfolded, but it's time to move on and figure out a way to make this happen. And I think, I don't know if it's, you know, before the season, but, you know, sometime pretty damn soon. And clearly Eichel's not cooperating. I mean, if he's dug in his heels this long, I would imagine he's not coming out of that stance. So, like you said, the CPA gives the Sabres sort of the last say here. But it's also Eichel. It's his body. It's a surgery he wants to do. It's not like he's suggesting something absolutely experimental and crazy. It's been done on other athletes and done well. It's just an NHLer hasn't undergone that type of surgery. So very messy situation, just really par for the course in Buffalo, if we're being honest.
So, John, I saw yesterday you were asking your followers for some bold predictions for the 21-22 season. So as soon as you tweeted that out and you generously agreed to come on the show, I was thinking, okay, we got to ask John for his, one bold or two bold predictions for the 21-22 season. But honestly, though, it seems like this time of year when, training camps are only, two or three days in, it seems like, everything's new and fresh. And even though the Tampa Bay Lightning might be the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions and everyone thinks, the Colorado Avalanche are probably the most talented team, like, what are some of the things that you are, thinking are going to happen? What are your bold predictions for this upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of a scale of bold, right? Because you could be really bold and just throw something out there that's probably not going to happen, or you can be sort of slightly bold. Like, some of the people that were responding to my tweet were just saying some outlandish things. Some people were being pretty honest, and it was, it was bold enough, but also realistic. I'll go with the latter there, bold enough, but also realistic. I think Florida will probably win the Atlantic. I have just this feeling when you look at that roster on paper and how they've slowly and agonizingly slow for people in South Florida have been building up towards a moment when they can actually break through with this Barkov era. And they showed a lot last playoffs against the Lightning. They add Reinhardt in the summer. They're getting Ekblad back. I think Spencer Knight, another bold prediction. I think he might be in the running for the Vezina. I know that's putting a ton of pressure on a guy who has barely played in the league, but I don't know if you guys have ever talked to him or if you've ever seen him get interviewed or just read anything in depth about him. Mentally, he's on another level, and I think the tools are there. There's a reason why he was drafted. I think it was 13th overall when they already had Bobrovsky. They felt like they couldn't pass on him. So I feel like he takes the net from Bobrovsky, and I assume because of that big contract that Bobrovsky has that he'll be a backup that gets to play a fair bit. But I do believe that Knight will be super important to their success, and that might get him some Vezina votes. And I think just Florida in general, they're a team to be reckoned with. You think of guys like Uyghur, who broke out last year when Ekblad was shelved. You think about guys like Verhaeghe, who came out of nowhere, and it seemed pretty pretty authentic, not just a hot streak. And Barkov is a world-class player. I really like what they've done, and I think they've built a formidable team. And I just also look at the Atlantic and I go, okay, I'm not going to count Tampa out, given they won two cups in a row. They still have all their four superstars: Point, Kucherov, Vasilevsky, and Hedman, but they lost their entire third line. I mean, that's a huge hole. So that there's sort of, there's a little hesitation there to give them the one up and give them the first place in the Atlantic. Plus, I feel like they're probably going to take it easy, so to speak, in the regular season. And I think Florida's biggest competition for the division would probably be Toronto if we're talking strictly regular season. But again, that's another team that's probably going to take their foot off the gas later in the season if, in fact, they already have the playoffs, a playoff spot clinched, and they can focus on what they need to focus on, because as it's well documented, the playoffs have not gone well for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's been the case. I was unaware.
Yeah. I mean, it's breaking news on this show right now. And then you've got Boston, who I think is like, I guess I could throw this out as another bold prediction. They might miss the playoffs. Just, I feel like there's going to be one year there, right? When they fall off, they've been, the same core more or less since around 2011, even a little bit before that. You've got Bergeron, who's getting pretty old. You lost Krejci, you lost Rask. I wouldn't say that they replaced these guys in any strong way. I guess you got Allmark coming in for Rask, but like Charlie Coyle's their second line center right now. I don't know about that, especially in that division. So, I mean, if you know, gun to my head, I say Boston makes playoffs, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they didn't. So, Ezra, I gave you like 10 bold predictions.
No, that was awesome. I love it. Well, this is the time of year, right? Like, I mean, a lot of people think, you know, the Los Angeles Kings might be a playoff team this year, right? And we know they have so many good young players there. And then you, of course, bring in Phil Deneau as your second line center. So I think LA is one of those teams, but I'm with you and Florida. And I would just, I know we're getting, you know, way ahead of ourselves here, but with Jumbo Joe there, I mean, I think it would just be great if, you know, they were even able to, you know, get close to the Stanley Cup final, and let alone win it. So I agree with you. I think, you know, and look, the Panthers took the Lightning to 6 games in the first round, right? So it wasn't an easy out for the Lightning. So I think absolutely the Panthers are one of those teams, you know, that are going to be one of those kind of preseason favorites to go on a long playoff run this year.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on our social media platforms. John is the senior hockey writer for The Score.
You know, John, we were talking about all the troubles in Buffalo, but if we take it to a Western Conference side, things aren't looking exactly very sunny in San Jose right now with everything going on with Evander Kane. You know, he's not with the team right now. How do you see this whole situation playing out? Not necessarily, obviously, the court stuff, but the idea of how his relationship has gone with the team and all the rumors about, you know, the team not wanting him to come back. How do you see this playing out in San Jose?
Yeah, it's really hard to gauge, right? Because we're not in the room, and the people who are in the room are probably not going to come out and say publicly, hey, we hate the guy. Hey, we want him out here. Hey, it's a huge distraction, right? Like, one, that's kind of a dick move, and two, maybe that's not how they feel. Maybe they are in his corner, so to speak, and want him to get help and want him to get better. So it's very hard for me to judge it in the full sense of the word. But what I will say is that Kane actually had a pretty good season last year. Like, I mean, if we're just talking strictly hockey, he was one of the better San Jose Sharks players. So they have a lot of problems in that dressing room. Like, I guess I shouldn't say in the dressing room, because that maybe is referring to the wrong things, but on the ice, They have some serious problems with the roster construction and those contracts, whether it's Eric Carlson, even a guy like Logan Couture, who's, you know, solid player and everything, but he makes a ton of money. He's overpaid. Brent Burns, they've had goalie issues for, you know, the last handful of years. They're really a tough team to get a handle on, because they also don't have top prospects coming in that can sort of lift this team to new heights and kind of grab these younger guys and bring them up again. Like we're seeing in LA, for example, where Doughty and Kopitar are kind of getting lifted up by these prospects. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, I guess we don't fully know what the NHL is going to do with Kane, because they are investigating him for a second reason. They cleared him of the original investigation, but then they sort of jumped straight to another one. So he's got a lot going on in his life, clearly. I mean, you know, if you've read any of the court documents or any of the reports, there's a lot going on, whether it's marital issues, gambling, some other things going on. So yeah, it's a mess. And also the backdrop, I should say, is that their GM, Doug Wilson, I mean, he's been the GM for, I don't know, 17, 18 years. So you'll wonder if, and not that this would be necessarily Kane related, but just roster construction, how the team plays on the ice as a veteran squad that is a cap team. Like, is this the beginning of the end for Doug Wilson's tenure there? He's probably been GM there for too long, if we're really being honest, right? So it could be a season of transition in a sense, where maybe they offload some guys at the deadline and they begin to start new. Because I don't really see the light at the end of the tunnel for this core.
John, who's the best team in Canada? Looking at the offseason moves, looking at everything that's been done, look at, you know, Montreal obviously made it to the Cup final last year, but now they're without Shea Weber and Carey Price is a little banged up. You know, it's, you know, so I guess the question, yeah, straightforward, who's the best team in Canada?
Well, let's work our way up from the bottom to the top. So
there you go. Process of elimination.
Yeah, like, let's just do some trial and error here. So yeah. I think Ottawa is still the worst team. I think that they'll be better, but they're just not there yet. And then I'm just trying to make sure I have all my teams in my head correctly. And then I think I'd go to Montreal in sixth.
Steep drop off.
Yeah. I think just what they did last season was kind of a house of cards in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And then maybe Calgary at five. And at the top, I think I would have Winnipeg, Toronto, and Edmonton. And then who am I missing, guys?
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Who still are, of course, without Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. So that's the asterisk you'd have to put there, of course.
Yeah, I think that they would slot in fourth or fifth. They're in sort of the Calgary area, at least in my opinion. So if we do that sort of ranking, then we end up with the three at the top, mm-hmm. Winnipeg, Toronto, and Edmonton. I want to say, like, and I swear I'm not pandering to your audience, but I swear on paper, it's got to be Winnipeg. And I think Toronto's right there, but if I'm being, you know, completely honest, it's hard to look past the playoff failures and the fact that it's basically the same team. And I also am not sure what kind of effect losing Hyman will have on their team. And then also the goaltending duo there, I'm not completely sold on. So that's Toronto. And then Edmonton, I think they made improvements. Do I agree with some of, you know, say Keith long term? Do I think, you know, that's a great fit? No, but like I think he'll be a nice fit there. It sucks that they lost Klefbom. If they could have kept Larson, that would have been fantastic for them. But they do get Hyman. I think Fogle's a pretty good player. So you add it all up, and I think I would go Winnipeg, Toronto, Edmonton, with Winnipeg standing on top as a team that's always been in contention for the best team in Canada, but that really bolstered their back end, as you guys know, this offseason with Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon. I've always been a big Brendan Dillon fan, just like meat and potatoes guy, stops his own entries, will make that first pass, can skate, he has some physicality. Like, you know, you're not getting a highlight reel goal from him, but also like he's also capable of, you know, doing some offensive things. He's pretty well-rounded. And obviously Nate Schmidt, you know, most people will know him from Vegas, and things didn't go well with the Canucks, but we'll see what this fresh start does for him. And, you know, I'm a little hesitant to put Winnipeg at top because kind of like the Leafs, the playoff success hasn't been there. I know they had a couple of strong showings, but there's been some disappointment with this core and how they haven't been able to truly break through. But I think when you look at that, the top end forwards, and what they did to the defense, I honestly think their defense is, it went from being like below average, no question, to like at the very worst average and probably above average now, if you're looking across the league, because I've always liked Pionk, you know, Morrissey, I think Morrissey was overworked before. So he's getting a lot of support now. Logan Stanley looked really good in the playoffs. So there's all that. And then you go, oh, look, Connor Hellebuyck, arguably the best goalie in the world. So Winnipeg's it's got a lot going for it. I really like Paul Maurice as a coach. Kind of similar to Doug. No, I mean, this is a bad comparison, but you know, the Doug Wilson thing where I'm saying, you know, it's been a while. You could say the same thing about Paul Maurice. So you wonder how long the leash is there, but that doesn't mean he's not a good coach. Doesn't mean he can't take this team far. So I would give Winnipeg the nod.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would put the Jets, the Oilers, and the Leafs as the top three as well, John. And just sticking with the Oilers, because I agree with you. I mean, I realize the Duncan Keith move was criticized a little bit. You mentioned Warren Fogle. You know, I think he's going to be a very underrated move. But I wanted to specifically, you know, ask about the goaltending, because you touched on it with Connor Hellebuyck and the Jets, right? Like, just unfortunate news for Alex Stalock, you know, with COVID-19. But, you know, when you look at, and I know Drew was probably the most critical of the Mike Smith, you know, re-signing, and we thought Mikko Koskinen was a potential buyout candidate, but what do you see kind of happening with the Oilers goaltending, right? Like, because we talked about, you know, Stalock is out now and he's not going to be an option, you know, as the number two or number three goalie, but do you see Kenny Holland kind of sticking with Smith and Koskinen and then maybe addressing it at the trade deadline? Or do you think maybe Kenny Holland pulls the trigger on a move kind of early on in the regular season, maybe?
Brutal timing. Right when you throw to me, I had to cough.
No, it's all good, John. I mean, you know how to use that mute button, so that's what we love to see.
Yeah, I don't want to be blowing up people's ears with my cough. I mean, it's pretty insightful, Ezra, where I think, you know, you look at Mike Smith, and last year was a bit of a dream in terms of, you know, this guy's like 38, 39 now. I can't remember if he's 40 or if he's 39 now, but he's, you know, approaching 40 at minimum. And you wondered when the wheels would fall off last season, and then now you're going, really, is he going to be able to do this again? So there's serious concerns there. And then you bring up Koskinen, who hasn't, you know, for being completely honest here, for being frank, has not been very good for the pretty much since he signed that contract. What was it? Yeah. Peter Chiarelli signed him to the contract and got fired like later.
Three days later.
Something crazy like that. So, I mean, they're going to have to do something, because I don't hate Mike Smith as in a tandem role. I really don't. But I think putting, you know, the bulk of the starts on his plate and the pressure of, hey, this is McDavid and Dreisaitl's team, you need to do something here. I don't think that's a recipe for success. So to answer your question, I think that Holland should be looking right now. I think that the issue is that you got to offload probably Koskinen. So you're looking at a team that will need to absorb his cap commitment. So I don't know who that may be. There are some teams across the league who have an abundance of cap space. So if they feel like they're not contending or their season's a bit of a write-off, that then maybe there's a fit there. I think the sooner they deal with it, the later though. The sooner they deal with it, the better. Waiting until the trade deadline might be too little too late, in my opinion.
Well, last question for you, John. We'll talk about the newest franchise in the NHL. Everybody's excited. We had voice of the Seattle Kraken and John Forslund on last week's show. And what are you expecting? What are you expecting from this team? Are you expecting them to be able to be competitive? I mean, I know everybody expects Vegas, and expansion teams aren't what we traditionally knew they were, which were, you know, the Columbuses, Minnesotas, which were always going to be terrible out of the gate and eventually get good. But what are you expecting from Seattle? It seems to be a lot of excitement. John was talking about it. People wearing Kraken gear and that sort of idea. So what kind of stuff are you hearing, and what are your expectations for this team?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, the market is just going to absolutely crush it. I think they have no issues there. And I think that's part of the reason why they didn't go crazy in the expansion draft, because they know they've got the people in their market in their back pocket. I mean, the season tickets have been – the deposits for the season tickets have been through the roof ever since they were awarded a franchise. And it's Seattle. I mean, it should have been a franchise for a number of years, right? There's no issue of selling the game necessarily. So I think from that perspective, and when you also factor in Ron Francis's history as a, we'll call it a conservative GM, I think that they continue to take it slow. I think they play a lot of 2-1 games this year with Grubauer in net, and a strong defense corps, and some forwards that are quite good defensively. There's not a lot of scoring there. I look around that roster, and sure, you know, Jared McCann could go off like William Karlsson did. Is that possible? Absolutely. I'm sure one of those players will go off and score 30, 40 goals. But by and large, when I look at that team, and I also loop in Dave Hakstol and his coaching style, I think that the impetus will be on, insulating the goalie and just playing, I guess, a safe brand of hockey that has a little bit of excitement. Because, you know, I think that they can get away with that for the first year, two, three, and also still win enough games where they're not a laughing stock. And there's also the upcoming draft in 2022-2023. Both of them are stacked with a ton of high-end talent. So Hey, if you want to get another Matthew Beniers who they pick second overall this year, you know, hey, maybe you don't win so many games. So that, I mean, I guess the issue, or it depends how you look at it, because it could be actually a benefit, is that the Pacific isn't very good. I mean, once you get past Edmonton and Vegas, It's wide open. So can Seattle make the playoffs? I think I would make it like a 50-50 bet at this point. And I mean, I'm looking forward, because I'm looking forward to that market being involved. And I think the Kraken as a team, a brand, whatever, they've done a really good job of I guess infiltrating the NHL community. And I know they're going to put on a show there with Jerry Bruckheimer as an owner. I mean, that's kind of that doesn't even need to be said. And they got a brand new rink, obviously, state of the art. They've got, you know, a young fan base, presumably, with all the tech folks in Seattle, in the Seattle area. So, I mean, that the expansion draft was a little underwhelming if we're analyzing it from the perspective of like, did it have that wow factor, their roster from that draft? But it really doesn't matter. I think they'll be a a fun story to watch, and I think they'll be able to write.
We'll let you go with that, John. Go get a Halls in your mouth. Go get that tickle out of your throat. It's, you know, hope you're feeling better real soon. We appreciate,
you being a trooper, John.
Yeah, playing hurt with us appreciate on this Saturday morning. John Mattis is the senior hockey writer for The Score. We'll do it again real soon, buddy. Thanks so much.
Really appreciate it, guys. Thanks again for having me on. Have a good
one. There he goes. John Mattis from The Score joining us here on the program. Let's take our final commercial break. When we come back, we'll give a quick update from Winnipeg Jets training camp skate that's underway, and we'll wrap up this morning's program. Stay with us. Drew Mundell, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on Saturday morning. Big thank you to Dennis Bayak and John Mattis for joining us for interviews this morning. In case you missed any of those, the show will be available for an immediate replay here on our YouTube channel. And of course, the podcast will be available a little bit later on, just as soon as Dave M gets his magic working and gets that posted. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, get it sent to you automatically each and every week. Quick update as for the Winnipeg Jets, they're on the ice at the Iceplex. Same usual groups as per usual. Only difference is Svechnikov is not with the main group today. He is with the second group. Some speculation that might have to do with playing translator for Dmitry Kuzmin, who has got his visa issues resolved, that courtesy of your friend Scott Billick. So Dmitry Kuzmin on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets. Maybe Svechnikov doing a little bit of making him feel comfortable and understanding everything that's going on at training camp. Luke Johnson in the role of Svechnikov this morning for the Winnipeg Jets training camp skate. Not too much to read into that, but just a little bit of update going on at the Iceplex for this Saturday morning. First exhibition game, first preseason game goes, of course, tomorrow, the Jets and the Ottawa Senators. So it'll be, again, a little bit more interesting, another little glimpse into the 21-22 Winnipeg Jets and what might come in future years as well, gentlemen.
Yeah, it's just nice to see, you know, game action again, right? Because even though, you know, it wasn't too long ago, it feels like that we were watching the Lightning beat the Canadiens in the Stanley Cup final. It's always good to, you know, we like training camp. We get excited to cover training camp and everything like that. But, you know, it's a different story when you're watching these guys play. So, yeah, we're going to see a mixture of NHL regulars and guys that are going to play in the minor leagues. But, you know, even though the Senators are not expected, you know, to be a Stanley Cup contender this year, guys, anytime, at least for me, watching Tim Stützle play, you know, you guys know I picked him to win the Calder Trophy last year. Obviously, Kirill the Thrill had something to say about that. But one thing for sure is Brady Tkachuk will not be in the lineup because he's still unsigned. Drew mentioned this earlier. Dave might have touched on it as well. Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, they're also still unsigned. So we expect those guys probably to get signed within the next few weeks, even though those Tkachuks like to sit out, right? So you're not going to see Brady in the lineup, but the same thing with the Senators, Dave. Like, you're going to see a mixture of guys that are going to be NHL regulars and guys that are going to play for Belleville in the AHL, right? So it's more so just for Winnipeg Jets fans. Like, let's be honest, guys, this is the first time we're going to see like a full arena in a long time. So that's the most important thing for me. You know, the exhibition games kind of later into next week, I'm going to take those a little bit more seriously. But for me, it's really about fans getting to see the Jets again live and in person.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ezzy. That was probably what I was just going to end the show on for me, was the fact that, you know, I was in the arena for almost all the games last year. It was so bizarre because there were, like, you know, some staff and 20 to 30 media folks, and that's it. And it was probably, I mean, again, we pray that it'll never, ever be replicated again, but it was extraordinarily unique and bizarre and a lot of other adjectives I could use. But, you know, you saw a little bit when the fans were in the building and obviously the healthcare workers, and that was great. But it'll be so nice to see somewhat of a return to normality, and that idea of having, you know, I don't know how many people are going to be there tomorrow, but whatever it is, it'll be, you know, 10,000 plus Manitobans in the building and being able to cheer on the Jets and regardless of the score, the idea that folks can have a little bit of normality back in their lives after, you know, what we've all collectively as a society gone through. That's the part I'm looking forward to. That idea of just having all these people being able to enjoy something, cheer, regardless, you know, again, exhibition games don't really mean much. you know, the team's focused on the players, but the idea that folks get to be together again and have some normality return to their lives and have that ability to cheer. I think that's the part that I'm really looking forward to. And we'll, it'll be interesting to be in the building and experience that, even though we're in the press box, a little different perspective, but it'll just still be interesting to watch and experience.
There you go. Well said, both of you gentlemen. Want to give a big thank you to the Illegal Curve sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram's. Support these fine businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey and they make this show a reality. On your way out to start your Saturday morning, be sure to hit the like button, subscribe. If you haven't already done so, do that on our YouTube channel and to the podcast as well. Thank you to so many of you for joining us on this Saturday morning. We'll do it all again 7 days from now, Saturday, 9 a.m. But be sure in the meantime, keep it locked on our Instagram, our Facebook, our Twitter, at Illegal Curve. And of course, our website where all the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news lives. That is IllegalCurve.com. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, IllegalCurve.com.